Tonight's guest speaker is James. James was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes around 10 years ago in February 2012, age 23. After a career in the music industry, James became a healthcare assistant and then trained to become a nurse. James is a diabetes educator for Eden and also is a diabetes specialist nurse. James is an avid user of social media and enjoys engaging with people with diabetes, healthcare professionals, and anyone within the diabetes community and industry.
Hi, Tom. Hi, everyone. Yeah, no, all good. Trying to get my little man settled for the night for school the next day. It was a little bit apprehensive, bless his heart. And so it's a bit of a struggle tonight. But now I'm here. I'm all good. Thank you. How's everyone else?
Doing well. Thank you.
Fab.
It's lovely to see you, mate, and appreciate you coming on because, yeah, you know what I mean? You got a lot on and stuff, and Noni with work and obviously at home life, and you've got diabetes as well. Before we get going, James, I don't know how long you've got, like half an hour or so, whatever. Anyone that's listening now, so tonight James is going to come on, and it's going to be a very informal chat because this month we're just taking a bit of a chilled groove, and we're just taking it easy, really. And James is going to come on, and he's going to share some tips on some of the things that you guys voted for. But before I do that, James, you might have caught the back end of what we were just discussing, and I'd appreciate what you think as well. So tonight we've looked at what does peer support mean to you, but also what does diabetes chat mean to you. Because as you know, in a couple of weeks' time, I'll be heading over to Stockholm to the DDoC symposium to talk about diabetes chat, which, like I said, is amazing. And I can't wait to share the community's voice. And that's what I'm doing is I've asked the question of what does diabetes chat mean to you? And then I can get some of your guys' voices heard over in Stockholm because I think it's important. So can I ask you, Chris, James, sorry, what does diabetes chat mean to you?
Good question. I guess it's a place where you feel you are, I don't know, you have a place of that you belong to in a way. Obviously you've got your friends and family and things, but you've got many people around you that don't truly understand what living with diabetes is like. They'll see, you know, things from your perspective, but you know, when you're having a hypo or when things are great, when things are bad, but you know, that really the real specific things that people kind of have in common that living with the condition from a day-to-day basis, this is a really good place to share those stories and people really understand where you're coming from and also learning from one another's experiences as well. And I think that this is the diabetes chat as well is just excelled at the peer support that's out there. I think it just shows what peer support there is out there. I think, you know, there's good groups, certainly in the UK, like Diabetes UK have a real good network of volunteer groups and stuff, but that sometimes takes quite a lot of time and effort for a lot of people. But for this, you know, you can just come onto Twitter and sign in and listen. You don't have to actually, you know, be a speaker or be a host, but you can at any point. You know, it's great to see that there's a few different speakers on and some who I've met. I've met Chris as well, who's so amazing. His story is so impactful as well. He'd be a great person to have speaking as a guest in the future. I know that he's spoken once or twice. I think it's just a real good, it's taken things to the next level. And, you know, I'm going to take it back to you, Tom. You know, you fully deserved of the DDoC place to go to Stockholm because, yeah, I bet you couldn't afford of doing such a thing at the start of the new year to thinking, I'm going to start a chat and see how it goes. And then the next minute you've got hundreds of people listening in and from 1 week to the next, and you've had so many amazing speakers come on. And yeah, you're off to Stockholm next. So no, it's a really good place. It's, and I hope it never ends, really.
Amazing, mate. Honestly, thank you so much. But yeah, I can't even, from that night, I will always remember it was a Sunday evening and I just sat in the room I'm sitting in right now. And I just felt for the first time in like 15 and a half years, whatever it is, I just felt right to just put a tweet. I started following a few accounts and seeing things, liking things. And I just thought, you know what, I've seen these Twitter spaces for football or things like that. And I thought, I'll set up a chat space and see if anyone wants to come talk. And it's just grown and grown week by week. And it's unbelievable. And it's part of my life. Like Tony said, it's a Monday thing now, isn't it? It's like everyone dreads Monday. It's back to work. But for me, it's like I'm buzzing for it. It excites me to just come on and talk and share and learn new things and connect all over the world. And I'm so grateful for that. And hopefully I can go to Stockholm and represent you guys well. But anyway, so tonight's chat, guys, on our diabetes chat, we've got James Ridgway with us, and he is a diabetes specialist nurse and Eden educator. And before we maybe look at the topic for tonight, because James is going to share some top tips, some diabetes top tips on Flash CGM, and then maybe if there's any open questions, we've got a few lined up as well, we can ask James them. But James, maybe just a minute or two, do you want to maybe just briefly introduce yourself, a little bit of who you are and your relationship to diabetes and your sort of career, just briefly?
Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully it's a lot more less time consuming than when I was a previous guest speaker. And I think, when was it? Was it in June time, was it, Tom? And
yeah,
I was a guest speaker then. And if you want to have a listen back, it goes right back to when I was diagnosed and stuff. So I work as a diabetes specialist nurse and diabetes educator. But my passion for diabetes started when I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes in 2012. So 10 years this year, actually. And I was misdiagnosed initially, and that gave me the motivation and real desire to kind of real want people to not experience what I went through, or having that misdiagnosis. Yes, I know it happens and stuff. So then I had the opportunity to join Eden to do the diabetes education part. It's based at the Leicester Diabetes Centre, and we educate doctors, nurses, but also a multitude of different healthcare and social care professionals as well. And we go all over the country as well. And we meet some of the most amazing people. And then I also do a clinical role, mainly in the inpatient hospitals of Leicester. And I do some clinics as well. One of them I do is mainly a type 1 clinic, which I did on Friday, actually. And it was an interesting one because there was one patient in there who, I can bring it up shortly, actually, and because it'd probably be one of the tips. But yeah, so I live and work all about diabetes. But I always say that, you know, I haven't been there, I haven't done it all, and I've got lots to learn and plenty to learn from all of yourselves as well, because I always think that what you see in a guideline in a textbook, you sometimes have to throw it out the window because it doesn't always fit with the person as well. You have to really think person-centered a lot of the time.
Amazing. And that was definitely much briefer than the last time we spoke. brilliant stuff, my friend. So yeah, guys, this evening, James is here. And at the beginning of the month, we set up a poll, and we wanted to ask you guys, didn't we, James? Because we did a Zoom, me and James, and we were on it. I think we were pretty much on it for about 2 hours once we got speaking, like, and we were talking about this night, weren't we? And we thought it should be a very nice, relaxed evening where we can get the community involved and see what you want to talk about. So we we got some threads together, some topics, and I put it in a poll and asked you guys, what would you like James to share his diabetes tips on? So we had Flash and CGM, we had insulin pens and pumps, health screening, and traveling and transport. And Flash and CGM won with 43%. So that's our hot topic for this evening. And then if there's any other questions, I'm sure we can fire them to James as well. So yeah, over to you, buddy. Is there anything you wanted to get going? And then also if anyone wants to jump up and ask James questions while he's discussing it, go for it, I guess, James.
Okay. So first, I guess it would be a good one to mention in that chat I did in June or whenever it was, I did a little presentation or a tweet presentation about time and range and, you know, how the data can look quite complex and but how you can use it in a methodical way to know where things are going well and where things, what sorts of things you can do to help. So I think it was only about 20 minutes long or something. So it's always good to have a little listen to that or something. But first thing, I guess, is the first top tip is for those that aren't on Flash or CGM to certainly consider it, but speak to your healthcare professional sort of as soon as, particularly those that are living in England with the new NICE guidance. And, you know, that we know now that people with type 1 should be given Flash or CGM. And it's in relation to the guidance, it's of any choice that is considers not just costs, but also the functions and the preference for the person. Because at the end of the day, it's going to be the person that uses the technology, not the healthcare professional. So it's just pushing, you know, really advocating for yourselves, pushing to strive to get that technology. And for those that are currently on Flash that want to change to real-time CGM, then absolutely, that there's the possibility of that happening as well. So you should push for that as well. Some of you might be thinking, well, what's the difference between one and the other? So Flash is basically what we call intermittently scanned CGM. So you obviously have to do a scan. It comes up with a result. And real time is where they don't have to do a scan and it comes up with the result as well. So a real good place to know, well, what are the different devices? And I guess I'd refer back to the DSM forum, and they created a nice table which compared so many different factors of all the different companies that produce Flash and CGM devices. And it's a real good one because there's so many things you need to consider about, you know, firstly, do you need to do scanning? What sort of, can you do handheld device or use phone, etc.? Can it link to a closed loop? Because we're in that moment where we've got the current trial going on, and the way things are going, it looks like that, you know, many people will be offered that in the future. So you want to be thinking about the future when the future is very bright. So my thing is, of those that are currently using real-time CGM, is think, are you happy with what you're using and what currently is out there, and do you want to change it? And those that are using Flash, do you want to change it to a real-time CGM? And those that are not, pushing as much as possible. And I had a very sad case on Friday of a patient who I suggested to be referred to my team, and one of the DSNs from primary care come in and shadow me, and they said that they previously, when there was no real criteria at the time, and they said that they were a patient had been declined of Flash because they didn't meet criteria. Well, actually, they would have, based on their psychological well-being, and they were struggling with their mental health because of type 1 diabetes. And they said that was that moment kind of made them have suicidal tendencies as well, and it was a real sad situation. But thankfully, the DSM then supported them and put them straight on Flash and CGM, which I'm so grateful for. And it's just, it's really kind of pushing yourselves for those that, that aren't on it, and because you deserve it is what I'm trying to say, basically. So that would be my thing, is accessibility, is getting yourself on it if you're not on it, and making the most of it, or changing it to make the most of it if you're on it as well. And then my next one is probably around sense-aware, really. And I think it can always be a challenge of the adhesive and knocking things into place and things like that. And I think certainly for patients that I see, you know, that's sometimes the bit that we don't always concentrate on is probably the adhesive. And I see some patients that apply it and then they're bleeding. And it's not very common that that occurs. And it's more because they've hit sort of a blood vessel, really. And it's just, I'd say in that moment, because it's going to last 2 weeks, it's all about just taking your time at that moment and making sure you've changed your sights and you've cleaned it, and all your devices are working as well. And ideally doing it at a time that your level, if possible, obviously if it's run out and it's on its time, obviously with the Dexcom G7, I think the Dexcom 1, you have an extended 12-hour period beyond the 10-day wear. But if you can do it at a time when your levels are generally quite, you know, your arrows are staying quite stable, nothing's going up and down too much, then that's generally an ideal time too as well. So it's just making sure you're changing it in a very calm way, and just taking your time, because then last thing you want is it to, either bleed or it come off and then you have to change in it, and you don't want to finger prick. And in relation to finger pricks, that's probably my third one, is that, make sure you've still got those things on your prescription. And just, I know that people say, oh, you don't need to do finger pricking anymore, but there is still a potential need to do some finger pricking. And I would say the main times is when it's rapidly changing the result. So when the trend arrow is really changing quite up and down. And certainly if you're hypo. So if you listen to the presentation that I mentioned around this thing called time lag. And the time lag has reduced over time. But I want you to imagine that sensor glucose, so the one that you use for the scanning or the real-time CGM, and that is like the front of the train, and then you've got the blood glucose, and the blood glucose is like the front of the train, and the sensor glucose is like the next carriage along. So when your glucose levels are rapidly changing, then the first thing that will make that first reaction or first response is that blood glucose. And then the sensor glucose will follow along. So if your glucose levels are coming down, then the first thing that you'll see come down first is that blood glucose. And then the sensor glucose will come down. It should follow a similar pattern, but it's more delayed. And the quicker the rate of the change, the more the time lag stretches. So when you're low, I say to patients to consider checking their glucose level, their blood glucose at that time, because they could already, if the sensor glucose is reading near to low or it's low, then the blood glucose may be lower. And then you're treating it. And if you're responding to the sensor glucose can sometimes obviously take a bit longer to respond. So when you've gone past, you've treated it, whether with a Wendy worm, that I'll put a tweet on shortly, and they're really good. They only one sweet to 11 grams, which is amazing. When you've treated it, and then
that's great.
I know. I was like,
love it.
It was.
Polo's
that's
quite
a
good
sweet
for
in a bit. That is. Say that again, Norman.
Polo's quite good for that as well, because they're pretty much made of sugar.
Polo's. I never.
Polo's. Or at least they used to be. I don't know because I haven't had any recently. If you don't mind, I'd like to go back to the little warm-up time thing. I wondered if Tom might have an opportunity to speak when he goes to Sweden. But the Libra sensors have a grace period at the end of it, but the app doesn't let you make use of it. There are alternate ways to do that, but I won't go into that there because they're not like medically approved or anything. But I don't see why you can't scan two sensors with the app, because the phone has the functionality for it if you're using a phone. And that'd mean when you've got a couple of hours left, you can scan your second sensor. And once that one's warmed up, it'll automatically discontinue the previous sensor. And that'd solve other problems like when a sensor's, you know, on the fritz and it's not doing its job over Bluetooth, for example. You could scan a second one and still be able to scan the old one during its warm-up time. That, I don't see why that's not a thing, because technologically it's very possible.
From what I know is that if you've applied a second sensor, and as soon as you scan the same device on that new sensor, it will then detect it as being a new sensor. So then it will say new sensor found. So then it will ask to do the 60 minute warm up. I've not come across where it will then detect it being two sensors.
That's what I mean. So you scan a new sensor, right? There's no valid reason, unless the sensor's ended, that you couldn't still scan the old sensor. It's something they'd have to program into the app. Like, phones have the functionality to communicate with multiple Bluetooth devices. They've had that for years. And it's not really proper communication. It's Bluetooth low energy. But I don't see why they can't do that. So that, like, when my current sensor has, you know, I don't know, 6 hours left or something, I think, oh, you know, I'll slap a new one on now before I go out. I can scan it and still be able to make use of the data from my old one while the new one's warming up. And when the new one's finished warming up, it can automatically discontinue and stop receiving transmissions from the old one. That should be something they should be able to program in, if that makes sense. I was kind of wondering if Tom would maybe find a slot to talk about it if he gets a chance.
I think it's very important, isn't it? Because otherwise, when your sensor finishes, so if my sensor was to finish now, then I'd apply a new sensor and my Libra takes 1 hour, my Dexcom takes 2 hours. You've got that sort of window where you haven't got the tool that you are using. Obviously, when your sensors break, then you have to obviously apply it and then wait that period. But yeah, it's something maybe hopefully the tech companies will look to improve in the future.
Yeah, look into it. James was saying that some of them have a grace period when the sensor's ended, you know, maybe a 12-hour one. And the Libras do have that, but the app doesn't make use of it. I'm using something called Diabox, which kind of turns it into a CGM. Like I said, not medically approved or anything, but that lets me use the sensor past its expiration date for about 10 hours usually. And in that time, I can use the Libra app to scan my new one and still have complete data during the time. And there's no reason the Libra app couldn't have that functionality, because it's there.
Yeah, I think that there is potential for that to happen for the Libra. I've not come across where it does an extended grace period like it does for Dexcom.
You have to use third-party apps, which is why I said it's not exactly medically approved.
Yeah, I've not come across that actually before. That's quite interesting, to be honest. Though, there is that what you're saying in regards to, you know, applying a new sensor and then that warming up and it kind of having it almost doing its own sensor scan. So actually, there is a device out there that now does that, and that's the Dexcom G7. So that one will, when you apply it, when you are near to the end of that other sensor, I think it does 30 minutes. Its warm-up time is 30 minutes for the G7. And in that time, it will... So you could apply it. You don't have to link it at that time. You apply it on your skin, and then it starts automatically working out what your levels are. And then when you've discontinued your current sensor and immediately started your other one, it will then start going from there straight away. So there is no waiting time as such.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And I'm just thinking, like, the Libra technically has that functionality, you know, via third-party apps that you probably shouldn't use. But there's no reason that couldn't be baked into the Lieberling app to be able to do something similar, because then there generally wouldn't be a gap unless you have a broken sensor. I don't see why it's not possible.
I agree. I think that there is that Libre will probably step up to that eventually. You've got to think there's so many new CGMs out there. And
to be fair, I don't have the Libre 3, which is the actual CGM, so I don't know if it's been baked into that, because I'm still on the Libre 2s. But
what was that? Sorry.
I don't know if they've done something like that with the Libre 3s or not, because I have the app and I'm still yet to actually get any Libre 3s, so I'm still on the Libre 2 at the moment.
Yeah, when I we created a thing called glucose sensing in primary care, where we worked with Dexcom and Abbott, and we created learning materials for primary healthcare professionals. When I was looking at the materials around Libre 3, it didn't. There wasn't really any information which confirmed regarding that. So I think the jury's still out regarding that. I mean, Tom's probably got the best experience on the Libre. Tom, you didn't manage to get yours going, did you? I managed to send you over one, but it didn't work.
No. But it was much smaller. So I think to answer the sort of question, I guess, is I think technology is advancing so much, isn't it? So I'm sure in years to come, these sort of things will hopefully be more accessible for us guys who have diabetes, isn't it? And I guess it's so important for us to communicate these ideas with the companies so that they can hear our lived experiences and know what works well or what we feel could improve. Here's one for you, James. With applying a sensor, would you recommend or Eden to apply a sensor way before a sensor is due? So if mine was to expire now at 10 o'clock...
Pre-soaking, I think you mean, don't you?
Yeah. So would you recommend that? Does that help?
I don't think there's any real great data out there that says about, you know, if you apply it much earlier, it will help. I think that there is this thing of the longer, you know, certainly after about 24 hours, then the reliability of the result is a lot more accurate than in the previous 24 hours. So again, I think the jury's still out on that one. I don't think there has been any, unless correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think there has been any studies as of yet that have looked at that exact thing. So I'm not too sure regarding that. I think that just you guys do what you feel is best for you. I mean, from a personal note, I tend to just as soon as that sensor's finished, I'll apply a new one, and yes, it leaves the hour out, but you know, in that time, we just go back to blood glucose monitoring and kind of go from there. Again, the deck, I think I'm all for Libre, but I'll promote anything that has advanced features. And I think one of the good features, again, about Dexcom is its calibration and the fact that you can finger prick, you know, particularly in those first 24 hours. So I've tried the G6 and Dexcom One. Hoping I'll be able to trial the G7 when they have plenty available. I think they didn't have many at the time when I was doing their research and stuff. But one of the things is if you aren't, like, you know, if there's a bit of a gap between the blood glucose and the sensor glucose, you can calibrate it. So you tell the Dexcom app what the finger prick result is, and then it adjusts the result accordingly. I think you had that time as well, Tom, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. both my Libre and Dexcom were reading massive differences, and I hadn't had any issues with my Dexcom really, and then suddenly did. And yeah, I calibrated with using the finger prick reading, and then it aligns.
Time of using both. Sorry, Tom, I think you broke up there for a minute.
Yeah, so yeah, the calibration, yeah, it helped. It aligned it back in, I really like the feature, and hopefully them sort of features will be used on other products, isn't it? I'm sure they'll learn from each other to know what works.
Well, I actually got to do that with the third-party app that I'm not supposed to be using with Libra. That also has a calibration. And I found that, well, in my two sets, I actually did it on the two sort of samples that I tried pre-soaking my sensors with, because they both ended up with a lot lower glucose readings than my actual glucose was. And it's the first time I'd ever had that problem, but I calibrated it with that app. And unfortunately, it doesn't apply when you scan it with Libra's app. But it did correct it for that time. So I actually managed to get use out of the sensors rather than replacing them. I just thought it was a bit wasteful because I put it on, you know, left it soak for a couple of hours and then scanned it.
So Norman, you know, with that app that you're using then, you know, if you are using that grace period, as you call it, and you can see the data on that app, presumably, obviously, you can't see it on the Libre link.
You can't see it. You can't even scan it on Libra's app.
No.
At all. It literally says sensors ended, start a new one. So, which is why I was saying I don't see why they can't give you that grace period in the app, because it exists. I use it.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think that one of the reasons is because the data reliability does wear down as the
that's
days
true.
Go on after a certain time. I think that's why they only give a certain time. It's a bit like insulin pumps, and like the Omnipod I use only lasts up for 72 hours. And that's because the reliability of the pump itself goes down after that particular time period itself. So I think that's one of the reasons. But also, because if it's not shown on the Libre link, then I'm presuming that the data that you're getting from the app post the completion of the sensor will then not be transferring onto the Libre view, which then I presume would be affecting your ability for your healthcare professionals to then see fully your data.
Which is another reason I think that it should be there, even because the thing is, I don't use it necessarily for the data for like Libre view or anything. It's mainly for me because I still want to be able to tell, you know, in what rough ballpark my sugars are while I'm applying the new sensor. And I can actually see in the app now, if I look in it, it's got 14 days, 9 hours and 53 minutes. It's different on everyone, but it's usually around there. So, you know, I've got a 9-hour grace time in theory that I can use while I apply my new sensor. It's mainly for me just so I can keep an eye on my sugars and not have that gap.
Yeah. No, I see the advantage of it, and I hope that Libre can go that way, because if Dexcom can, and I don't know about other CGM devices, if they do that, but, you know, if something can and something's out there, then I'm sure there will be plans for
I mean,
like
even
Libre
if they want to shove a giant notice that goes off every hour or 20 minutes or something saying, hey, you know, data might not be as accurate during this grace period, you know, so don't necessarily rely on the data, do a finger prick test or whatever. Okay, fine, do it, but it's already there. The battery is going to last as long as it's going to last. Let me use it.
Yeah, I suppose there's the risk factor, though. Again, like if you have that lesser reliability, and yeah, if you've got a warning, you've got a warning, so you've got some backup there. But say if you've got, you know,
I'll have to do some tests for you. Actually, I'll tweet you the results because my sensor's got about 2 days remaining. I'll actually let it go into the grace period and see how accurate it is compared to normal.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think though, you know, with that reliability, the lesser so that it gets, then I think it becomes a bit harder. You know, particularly if you're on the lowering end of your target. You know, and you think someone might think, oh, I'll trust that result or something. And you know, in fact, the blood glucose is a bit lower than that. I mean,
then if that was the case, though, why does some offer grace periods and some don't? Because surely if the reliability is going to go, it's going to go on any battery-powered device, right? In theory.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that for those that do offer it, like Dexcom, I think they would have trialed that to see the reliability of it.
Yeah, I'll do some tests because my sensor is ending in the next couple of days. I'll do some tests. I'll sort of stick another one on and let, you know, Libra scan that one. But I'll do some tests to see if it's any less or more reliable.
That'd be great to see.
I think I don't know whether it's just saying, one thing I have noticed actually with the Libra, sorry to be railway a bit, is the battery seems to, I can't say die, but it, you know, when you scan it with your phone, for the first 2 days or 3 days, I can probably scan it, you know, halfway across my chest and it will scan. But after that, I have to literally put my phone right on top of the sensor. And I actually don't know what that's about, whether it's just the battery's not outputting as much of a voltage or what. I really don't know. It just seems to react a lot faster when it's new, which makes sense. But, you know, after 2 or 3 days, you think it still have enough battery to do that still.
I'm not sure regarding that.
I was just going to say, I think the big thing with the availability of the grace periods is just whether or not the manufacturers have actually done the testing to verify that it remains accurate beyond the initial wear period. I'm sure it's, you know, extra data that they collect as part of the clinical trials process. And if you're doing a clinical trial of X many days, then do you actually want to hassle paying the trial participants to keep the sensor on and continue collecting data? And obviously you would need a slightly different version of the hardware that would enable you to do that. And you also need the basis of comparison, which means having people actually in a clinic and doing periodic blood draws to verify the accuracy of the readings against, which costs a lot more money. I mean, we're, you know, it's to the point now where the hyper-accurate meters that they use to as the basis for comparison aren't even manufactured anymore. So literally all the ones that currently exist in the world are all that there are. And it's actually creating a little bit of a problem for research in that that sort of gold standard meter is in extremely limited supply.
James, we had a question as well. Following your tip about sensor wear, and it's from Claire. And Claire's on the line. Claire, did you want to ask your question to James?
Hi, James.
Hi there.
My question is there anything I can use to stop my skin itching when I'm wearing my sensor?
Whoa, that's a hard one. So as long as the area is clean, I have heard of some people put some sort of, I don't know, there's like a, I mean, what you could try is applying, like, you know, there is a thing like Cavalon cream. Some people apply that on first as a barrier, and then apply the sensor on, as long as you're not sensitive to Cavalon itself. That can sometimes help. If the adhesive is becoming that much of an issue for you, then I would speak to your diabetes team to then look at an alternative device such as real-time CGM, because now we've got you know, Dexcom ONE that's prescribable in primary care, though funding in some areas is yet to be sorted for some. But yeah, you could try a barrier cream and see how that goes, and then if it's still not good and if it's really causing you problems, then, you know, that's the least of what you want, really. You want your life to be made easier rather than harder. So yeah, try it and see what happens. And we've had a few patients in our clinic who've had that experience, and it's to the point where we've had to try alternative devices, and some have worked and some haven't. I hope that helps.
Thanks, James.
It's all right.
Brilliant stuff. Thank you so much. Was there anything you wanted to add on to your diabetes top tips on flasks and CGM, James? Or do you feel that's a sort of a little brief segment? And obviously, we've done the previous chats that people can head on the website and check out in more detail.
Pretty much. Probably the only one is with those alarms. You know, some people might say, oh, you've got to have set alert alarms and
making sure that the right points. My main thing is making sure you don't get alarm burnout and setting those low and high alerts at the right point where they're not always going off. So you want the high alert to go off at a point where it doesn't normally get to in terms of the glucose level. And you can adjust those. You know, they're not a one set all thing. So when I'm doing exercise, I'll move that low glucose alert upwards. Just so it gives me, because I use Flash, I use Freestyle, so I don't have the same option as a Dexcom. Obviously, the great thing with Dexcom is it gives a predictive low alert, except for the Dexcom One. Sadly, it doesn't have the predictive low alert. So just making sure that the alerts are set right for you. And if you have got alarm burnout, then you know you do have the right to switch them off. And you'll still get the readings. Obviously, I'd strongly advise against it, but I think we'd all prefer people to be using the technology rather than stopping it altogether. So it's just making sure that it works for you and it's set at the right point. And I think we put a link in previously of the DTN UK guidance of where appropriate to set the alerts for you. But know that it's not a one set thing. So when your healthcare professional says, oh, you need to set this alert at this point, you can adjust it basically. So do what works for you.
Amazing. Thank you so much, James, for your amazing top tips. Anyone on the panel have any other questions for James while he's on, or anyone who's listening the next couple of minutes, was there any burning questions that you want to ask James? Take this opportunity to ask James DSN question. You can request the mic, or if you tweet the question, you can. We'll get that to James in the next couple of minutes. And if James jumps off, we'll target him in that, and then hopefully, I'm sure he'll get back to you. But anyone on the panel that had any other questions?
Silence is golden.
So they're all go on, Claire.
I have a question, James. I don't know whether you were on earlier on. I'm a registered learning disabilities nurse, and I would like to expand my training to cover diabetes, because we've got some of our service users who are diabetic. What would I need to do?
Oh, good question. So there's a range of different things that you can do. I suppose it depends on what your end goal is to achieve. If you're wanting to, you know, do a master's in diabetes, as many unis around the UK that do it, that even at Leicester. But if it's from a basic perspective, there are many different educational platforms out there. So I'll first start with EDEN, which stands for Effective Diabetes Education. Now we've got many different programs available which talk about all sorts of things in relation to diabetes, and we have some programs such as Complement, which kind of goes right back to basics and then goes up to talking about cardiovascular disease and kidney disease. I've led on a care home program, which is now a national program and soon to be rolled out in Ireland, called CARES. So I guess it's what really tickles your fancy, really, and what you want to do. There's other providers out there. There's CDEP, who have a range of different e-learning materials. There's DTN UK and Gluco. They've done some great videos on mainly around technology. There's the conferences that are around and about. There's the DPC conference coming up in, I think, November. Is it November? And that's a free conference to attend in London for 2 days. And so there's so many different places. And you're more than welcome to message me, Claire, and I can find out more information, and I'll try and get you in the right direction.
Thanks, James. That's really helpful.
It's okay.
Hello, sorry, I'm back. I went for a pee, so didn't quite want to unmute my mic at that time. What was the question?
Claire asked what education resources there are out for her to enhance her diabetes knowledge.
I thought there was something before that. Maybe I misheard.
I can't remember now. Got a goldfish memory.
Me too. Don't worry.
I was just asking Norman before that about the problem I'm having with itchy skin with my sensors.
Ah, okay. That makes sense. I tweeted you my solution, but well, that works for everyone. Where roughly do you live? Obviously, not good to announce everywhere on the internet, but you know, what kind of rough area do you live in? Because if you're close to me, East Midlands. Okay, Midlands. That's a bit more brief. Because I was going to say, if you're close to me, I could probably send you some, because I've got some here that I really don't use that much anymore.
That would be great, actually, Norman.
Drop me a DM with what town you're in. And if you're local, I'll deliver them. If not, I might be able to post them out to you.
Okay, thank you.
No worries.
So there we go, guys. That's peer support in a nutshell there, isn't it? Helping each other, connecting with DSMs like James, and coming on and having a live Q&A. And what a fantastic sort of 45 minutes, James. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no worries at all. If anyone has any more questions, then just plop them in a tweet or something, or you can message me privately. And I'm more than happy to do this sort of thing again in the future. So it's nice having a casual chat. Though I do miss Chris's final countdown singing as well. That's I think that needs to come back again.
Now you've told him that, he now has to do it. it's the rules.
I think that microphone is staying. Oh no, it's unmuted.
No, have we got him?
I was just going to say request denied.
No!
Brilliant stuff. Indeed. So cheers, James. I hope we'll definitely connect up, I'm sure, again. With the 24-hour diabetes chat, I'm sure you'll be part of it. But on other things, I'm sure we'll cross our paths, and we appreciate everything you do, not only for diabetes chat, but for everyone within diabetes care.
Oh, no, yeah, definitely. Look forward to seeing what happens about World Diabetes Day, that's for sure. And no, thank you for having me, and I'll see you again or speak to you all again soon.
Nice one, buddy. And I hope all goes well tomorrow with school.
Thank you very much. See you later.
Cheers, buddy. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.